How's it going, everyone? It is once again me, Chewy, and I am the host of this horror podcast titled Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends. And before we get started with today's episode, I want to remind you guys you can check out our social media, and the easiest way for you guys to do that would be to go to our Linktree page, which is linktree.com/myths behind LGDS. You can find the link to our Twitter profile, Instagram, Facebook, etc. Also, you can find the link to our merch store, so if you are in the mood to score some sweet EMBL swag, I encourage you to go ahead and do that. So for today's episode, we're going to be talking about the 1994 adaptation of Anne Rice's novel, Interview with the Vampire. So, as is the format for this season, I shall be doing the first part of the episode solo. And for the second segment, Mariah will join me and give us her impressions on this film, so stick around. All right, so let's go ahead and get started with our critique slash review slash rant. And the first thing that I'll be doing is going over some of the credits for this movie. And as I mentioned earlier, it was made in 1994. It was released in November 11th. And it was directed by Neil Jordan, whose other big film besides this would probably be The Crying Game. And I've heard that's a good movie. I haven't seen it actually, but I've heard that it's pretty good. And as far as this movie goes, it would be based on a screenplay by Anne Rice, who is also the author of the novel. And it stars Tom Cruise as Lestat, Brad Pitt as Louis, Steven Rea as Santiago, Antonio Banderas as Armand, Kirsten Dunst as Claudia, and Christian Slater as Daniel Malloy. There's other minor characters here and there, but they are probably going to be the biggest names in this film. And the budget for this film was at around $60 million, and it collected about 224 million on the box office, so it's a pretty good success, I would say. So, for the plot of the film, it starts off in San Francisco in the 90s, and Louis, who is played once again by Brad Pitt, is having a conversation with a man named Daniel Malloy, and basically, Louis is confessing to this guy, Daniel, that he happens to be a vampire. And Daniel's like, sure, bruh, whatever. What are you smoking? Because I want some. And so, anyways, Louis starts telling him about his life, saying he was a plantation owner in the 1700s in Louisiana. And he went through a horrible tragedy. His wife died in childbirth, and so did the child. So he became an alcoholic to deal with the pain. And he wanders around the questionable districts of New Orleans, getting himself in all kinds of trouble. And in one of those crazy nights of debauchery, he happened to have been spied on by Lestat, who is a vampire. And Lestat is a cynical bastard. He's kind of a douchebag, but also kind of a cool guy in a way, and I'll go in depth as to how that is possible in a while. But essentially, Lestat catches up with Louis, and he senses that Louis doesn't really want to go on with life anymore. So he offers him to become a vampire, and Louis's like, sure, man, whatever. And Lestat bites him, and that is how his transformation starts. So Louis doesn't really want to be a vampire. And as I mentioned earlier, Lestat's kind of a douchebag because he enjoys the hunt. He enjoys drinking the blood of humans. He's living it up. He's a vampire and he's owning that lifestyle. But Louis has what Lestat would eventually call a moral compass, so he doesn't really want to kill anyone. And so Lestat has to feed him the blood of rats to keep him alive. And even when Lestat is the one that offs the human, Louis is reluctant to drink. He doesn't really want to partake in that, even though that is what he is now. he refuses to give up his quote-unquote humanity at this point. And there happens to be a time lapse. I mean, more stuff happens, of course, but I'm not going to go over every scene. But after a while of Lestat and Louis arguing back and forth as to what it is to be a vampire and for Louis to renounce his humanity and embrace his vampirism, there is a scene in which we see a plague outbreak in the city of New Orleans. And Louis gives in to his vampiristic, or vampiric instincts rather, and so he feeds on a little girl who happens to be Claudia, played by Kirsten Dunst. And Lestat blackmails, basically, emotionally blackmails Louis into sticking around with him by converting Claudia into a vampire. Because one of the things about vampires in this story universe is that they really can't kill the person in one sitting. They need to stop drinking the blood of the victim before the victim dies. Otherwise, the vampire themselves gets hurt. And I believe they can die also from this if they're not careful. So anyways, Lestat converts Claudia. And they become her surrogate parents. And it's a nice little montage of scenes here. Because Lestat finds that Claudia is a very, very, very clever child. What is it with us and talking about scary kids in movies this season? But basically, he's training her. He's showing her the ways of vampirism throughout all of this. And we see her killing different people at different times. And Lestat is basically like, no, bad girl. Slapping her in the wrist every now and then. I think she eats, or she drinks the blood of, rather, her piano instructor and a couple of other people. And Lestat's just like, what am I gonna do with you, Claudia? Oh my god, no, no. But at the same time, he's enjoying her transformation. Which contrasts with that of Louis, because Louis is still very reluctant. He still doesn't want to drink human blood. He has to every now and then to stay alive, but he tries to put that off as much as possible. And so we have another time lapse in which Claudia becomes more and more bitter because of the fact that she realizes that she will never be able to become a quote-unquote grown woman anymore. So she basically becomes an old soul trapped in the body of a 10-year-old, so to speak. So this is when she asks Lestat and Louis which one of them was the one that converted her. And Lestat says, it was me, you know, whatever. And so Claudia, being the clever mastermind that she is, she decides that she is going to kill Lestat and escape with Louis. So how she plans about doing that is by killing some boys that she found in the street. She brings them over to Lestat's place, or Louis' place, and she poisons them, and then she has Lestat drink their blood. And as I mentioned earlier, if a vampire drinks the blood of a dead human, they become tormented. They start going through this, like, fit, kind of like a seizure of some kind. And as Lestat is dealing with this, Claudia takes a fucking razor blade or a big ass knife, whatever it was, and like slits its throat completely. She almost decapitates him. It's pretty disturbing. It's pretty gruesome, but it's cool to see. And Louis, when he walks in, he's like, what have you done, girl? And so Claudia just convinces him, yeah, let's just dump this mofo in the nearby swamp and just have the alligators eat him, and that'll be the end of him. So they do that, they take his body to the local swamp and dump him in there. And they spend the next few weeks trying to plan a getaway trip to Europe, because Louis wants to find other vampires to have philosophical conversations with them about what it means to be a vampire. But Lestat, chan-chan-chan, is actually alive. He confesses that he survived in the swamp by drinking the blood of the swamp creatures. So he looks like crap. He looks like he's gone through the grinder a couple times there. but they're able to overpower him and they escape the town, which is now on fire, thanks to Louis. And the next time that we see them, they're in Paris in the 1800s. And it is here that Louis finds Santiago and Armand. And Armand gives Louis and Claudia the invitation to his vampire coven, which is called the Théâtre des Vampires. I speak French. Théâtre des Vampires. And basically, what these guys do is they eat people in front of a live audience. And the audience, not that they're okay with that, mind you, but they all think that it's part of a performance. It's performance art. So we witness one of their shows actually at some point in the movie. And this girl is screaming for her life. Nobody helps her, of course, because they all think she's acting. So they drink her blood, and when they're done, excuse me, drinking her blood, she's all naked and she's wilted like a flower, and they just kind of toss her aside like she's a piece of trash. So that kind of gives you an idea of where the headspace of these guys is, the vampire coven. So Louis and Claudia hang out with them for a bit, but vampires have secret powers, and one of those powers is that they can read the mind of other people. And so he comes to believe that Louis and Claudia have somehow killed or injured Lestat. One of the rules of being a vampire is that you don't turn against your own kind. So Santiago starts plotting a way to avenge the death of Lestat. Armand senses that something is wrong, so he tells Louis, "Hey man, you gotta send Claudia away because something's gonna happen to her if she's with you. And you can stay here with me and I'll teach you the ways of the vampire." Claudia finds out and she basically tries to blackmail Louis into converting a woman named Madeline because she wants someone to be there for her. She doesn't want to be alone. And Louis gives in. He doesn't want to. Like we've said earlier, he's really reluctant of converting other people or even drinking blood for that matter. So then Madeline becomes a vampire, and the vampire coven finds out where they're at. And so they capture Claudia, Madeline, and Louis. And Santiago basically has determined that Louis is going to be trapped in a coffin forever behind the wall. And Claudia and Madeline are going to be trapped in this sort of dungeon where they will be converted into vampire bacon bits. because what's going to happen to them is they're going to sit there for basically all night until the sun comes out. And when it's noon, the sun will be shining directly on them, so they will be burned to a crisp. Armand, in the meantime, has not really done anything to help Louis. I think he feels that he would be overpowered if he tried to go against all the vampires himself. So he waits for a while and then he frees Louis from his coffin prison in the wall. And then Louis finds out that Claudia and Madeline are dead already. And Louis goes on a fucking rampage, man. He decides to kill all these no good vampires for taking Claudia away from him. And what he plans to do, and he actually carries out this plan, is set them on fire so that when they feel the fire inside their coffins, they pop out. Kind of like whack-a-mole. It's like vampire whack-a-mole, except he fucking cuts their heads off with a sickle. That's a pretty cool scene. I gotta give it to them. That scene is pretty legit because he takes this huge sickle and basically becomes the Grim Reaper for these creatures. So, but I mean that whack-a-mole thing, it's a funny analogy because it's true. You start seeing these vampires come out of the coffin like, because they're burning to death. I don't know what that was, sorry. so as they're popping out of their coffins, this guy just cuts their head off. And so he gets all of them. And Santiago comes in and he's like, haha, you're not gonna get me. So he tries to move with this super vampire speed, but Louis can read his mind. Chan chan chan, he's embracing his vampire powers for the first time, I think. So he realizes that Santiago is gonna try to sneak behind him. And he swings that huge ass sickle and slices Santiago in half. Hell yeah. 10 out of 10 for that kill, by the way. It's awesome. So the whole place is burning, and Louis's trying to escape, but he realizes that it's almost daytime, so he's panicking. But Armand shows up in his carriage and saves him. After this, they have a conversation, and basically, Armand proposes to Louis. Not like that. But he suggests to Louis, rather, that he should stay with him so he can once again learn the ways of the vampire. But Louis refuses to hang out with this guy anymore because he knows that he could have done more to save Claudia, and so he leaves him. And so Louis keeps going with the story, and it now is the 1980s in New Orleans once again because he goes back home. And he is wandering around the city at night, and he comes across Lestat. Chan Chan Chan, of all people. Lestat looks more like shit than ever. He looks the weakest that we ever see him, and it's kind of different from the beginning. In the beginning, he's this show-off, this self-centered douchebag. And when Louis finds him again in New Orleans in the 80s, he's now the exact opposite of that. So Lestat asks Louis to help him out, and Louis's like, eh, nah, bruh, I'm good. Deuces. So he leaves Lestat in this little abandoned mansion, whatever it was. And we now come back to the 1990s and the conversation between Malloy and Louis. And Malloy is super intrigued by this. He wants to be a vampire. He wants to, like, embrace that life. And Louis gets pissed off because he basically spent the past few hours trying to explain this guy why being a vampire sucks, no pun intended. And all this guy can say is like, man, I want to be a vampire. I would, oh, like, cool, make me one, make me one. So Louis basically swats him off like a fly. He actually slams him against the ceiling. And so he leaves with his vampire super speed. And Malloy runs up his car because he actually recorded this entire conversation. And he's driving through the night in the city. Or rather, through the city in the night. Excuse me. And he's listening to the conversation, but chan chan chan, none other than motherfucking Lestat is hiding in the backseat or whatever. And he bites Malloy, basically giving him what he wants. I mean, he's, well, I think he still has to make the choice of whether he still wants to be a vampire or not. But the movie ends with Lestat driving Malloy's car. I don't know how Lestat learned how to drive. Maybe by drinking his blood, he can also absorb his knowledge and powers. Yeah, because driving is a superpower, believe me. Some people either can't fucking drive. if that upsets you, then yeah, you know who you are. But anyways, that's how the movie ends. And the credits roll. And that's it, pretty much. So what I'm gonna do now is I'm gonna go over some of the after the fact stuff. So as I mentioned earlier, the movie made somewhere in the neighborhood of around $224 million on the box office, so it became a huge success. But actually, Anne Rice was really reluctant of having this movie made because, according to our trusty source Wikipedia, she had suggested a different actor, actually different actors, to play the roles of Louis and Lestat. And so when she found out that the company hired Tom Cruise to play Lestat, she was like, oh, hell no. She was not a fan of the idea. She hated the idea. She said, and I quote, "The casting was so bizarre, it's almost impossible to imagine how it's gonna work." So she threw around some names to the production company, including John Malkovich, Peter Weller of RoboCop fame, Jeremy Irons, and Alexander Godunov to play Lestat. They, of course, didn't heed her words. So then, at the point of which the roles were cast, she told the production company, well, can you at least have Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt switch their roles? And so there's another quote from her where it says that I tried for a long time to tell them that they should just reverse the roles. Have Brad Pitt play Lestat and have Tom Cruise play Louis. Of course, they don't listen to me. So she was pretty upset about the whole thing, but once the movie came out and she saw the premiere, she actually went on to say, from the moment he appeared, Tom was Lestat for me. That Tom did make Lestat work was something I could not see in a crystal ball. She even went as far as calling Tom Cruise herself and say something along the lines of, "Hey, bruh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I misjudged your performance, your acting skills, and I was wrong." So that's good for her. I mean, that's good on her part. But there's also some other stuff here involving the fact that she thought that because of the perception that there was of the LGBT community back then, that she would have to switch Lestat's, or sorry, excuse me, Louis' gender to female. And they actually considered having Cher play Louis. I guess it would have been Louise at that point. So, I mean, that would have been really interesting. I mean, even the idea of Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise switching roles would have been really, really interesting. It would have made a completely different movie, I think. Because Tom Cruise, we all know, is a little woo-hoo. And I guess he uses that in his portrayal of Lestat because this guy feels like he's right at home there. And something of a tragic note here, River Phoenix, Joaquin Phoenix's brother, was actually cast to play Malloy, the role that ultimately went to Christian Slater after Phoenix unfortunately passed away. But the cool thing about Christian Slater is that he donated his entire salary for the movie, or from the movie rather, to a charity of Joaquin Phoenix's preference. So that's pretty cool of him. As a side note here, I do want to mention that I think that time has been a little bit unkind to Christian Slater. He was kind of a good actor in the 90s, and then he disappeared and he started making all these weird movies and kind of phoning it in. He was actually in that horrible adaptation of Alone in the Dark with, I believe, Tara Reid and Stephen Dorff of Blade fame. But yeah, I mean, I think that he made some good movies. He made that movie called Broken Arrow, which is kind of over the top, but I mean, what 90s action movie wasn't over the top, really? And he also made the classic True Romance, so yeah, we should give more credit to Christian Slater. And I have one more thing here that I want to mention. this is hilarious because Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, in their respective roles of Lestat and Louis, actually won the Razzie for Worst Screen Couple. I think that's hilarious. I don't know who they were competing against. It would have been interesting to see who the other Worst Screen Couple nominees were, but I mean, that's to me pretty funny. And actually, that is kind of a nice segue into what I want to talk about next, which is some of the themes of the movie, which, believe me, there are a lot of. But I'm only going to talk about a few of them because of time constraints. So, So, anyways, I'm going to start off with the obvious, which is how sexually charged this film is. There's a lot of sexuality, a lot of sexual imagery, and even as I mentioned earlier, there is some homoeroticism between Louis and Lestat, and then Louis and Armand. And I also mentioned already that Anne Rice thought that this movie was going to be really difficult to make because of how she thought that Hollywood perceived the members of the LGBT community. But overall, the film has a lot of sexual imagery. It's very sexually charged. And I gotta pose a question of why it is that people think that vampires are sexual creatures. I mean, I don't know. I bet you have your own answer in your own mind. I wanna think it's because maybe people see them as a release of their own animal impulses in their own minds. So, if you believe the theories of Sigmund Freud of psychoanalysis, the id, ego, and superego, of which the id would be the animalistic and impulsive part of your brain, Think of it like the ns mode, the party animal, the I want to do naughty things and get away with them part of yourself. And we have to repress that. I mean, we can't be crazy all the time. Only on weekends and only when we're drunk, please. By the way, I do not condone alcoholism, even though I drink like a fish. So to put it another way, it's kind of like a dam. Think of it like that. A dam that's containing this flood of dark and seedy impulses that society will judge you harshly for. And of course, at some point, if you don't release some of that stuff, it'll burst. And that's why I think that people consider vampires to be sexual creatures because they see them as a carefree, I can do whatever the hell I want and get away with it part of themselves, maybe. So the next thing that I want to talk about is the theme of fire in the movie. We see a lot of fires in this film, don't we? It's a arsonist's wet dream, so to speak. But I like to think of the fire in this film as a symbol for a couple of things. Historically, I mean, in literature and stuff like that, I think fire has been used as a symbol for destruction, but also for cleansing, transition, and rebirth. And the way that's applied in this movie, basically, every time that Louis transitions to a different part of his life, there's a huge ass fire. So we see it in that plantation when that slave girl confides to him that his slaves are afraid of him and of Lestat. So he decides to set his mansion on fire. And that is the first time that we see a fire in the film. And then the next time that we see a fire is when Claudia and Louis are trying to escape from Lestat's company. And when Lestat comes back from the swamp, he attacks him, and Louis throws this oil lamp at him and sets him on fire, which in turn sets the entire French Quarter on fire in New Orleans. And if you think about it, I mean, we all have this mental picture of the French Quarter being this decadent place, especially back then, I think. So my interpretation of that scene is that maybe we're supposed to see that as a cleansing of the debauchery of the French Quarter. Not that I judge anyone, but I'm just trying to think of literary or, yeah, that kind of stuff. How people in those fields would interpret these things, symbolism and such. And the third time that we see a fire is when the French vampires kill Claudia and Madeline, and Louis is freed from his coffin prison by Armand. So what he does is he sets the whole fucking theater on fire. And I guess we can see that as another bookmark, kind of turn the page moment in his life. And if you think about it, it's kind of like the Legend of the Phoenix, to quote Daft Punk. Like the Legend of the Phoenix. of what's that song called? Get Lucky. Anyways, like the bird of mythology, which burns and then is reborn from its ashes. You can probably say the same thing about Louis. He goes through a difficult time in his life, and he decides that the best way to deal with it is to just set everything on fire. I mean, literally and figuratively, I think. And then we see him being reborn at a different point of his life. He builds a life for himself in a different place. He tries to move on from the past, but eventually it ends up catching up with him, so he has to do another symbolic fire of cleansing. So, yeah, deep stuff, huh? And speaking of character arcs, Louis goes from hating life to wanting to die to being stuck living forever. And can you imagine the mental state that would put you in? You lose your wife and child once, and then twice, symbolically in the future, when Claudia and Madeline are burned by the French vampires. So he now has to basically accept it, and he ends up accepting what he is at the end. He still hates it, he still hates being a vampire, I think, at the end of the movie. But we see an interesting development of his character throughout the movie. And then, of course, we have Lestat, who goes from being a frat boy type of person who enjoys his lifestyle to, at the very end, right before the end, actually, before he hides in Molloy's car, he is a shadow of his former self. He's even scared of a helicopter because he thinks it's the sun. He thinks the helicopter light is going to burn him to death. And so Louis is like, chill, bruh. It's just a light. It's not going to hurt you. But, I mean, the point of that scene is to see how weakened he's become, how afraid he is. Which, again, is a nice character arc for him. He goes from being up on top to being in the bottom. And we see the opposite in Claudia. Claudia is the opposite of Lestat because she starts off being a scaredy cat child who saw her mother die of plague in New Orleans. But as she spends more and more time with Louis and Lestat, she ends up becoming this evil, scheming mastermind, man. She's truly scary. I'd be terrified of that child if I saw her in the street somewhere. And then we have, of course, Molloy, who, in the beginning, when Louis tells him, I'm a vampire, Molloy's like, all right, bruh, whatever you say. So he went from being skeptical to, at the very end of the movie, he's totally enthralled by Louis' story. He's like, oh my god, dude, you gotta make me a vampire because how cool is that? So that begs the question, why are we so stubborn? Someone tells us not to do something and the first thing we do is do that exact same thing, isn't it? Admit it, you've done it. So why do you do that? You might want to ask yourself that question next time you see yourself in the mirror. Unless you're a vampire, because then you can't. Actually, I think the vampires in this movie can see themselves in mirrors, I think. I might be wrong, but I think they can. And anyways, the last thing that I want to talk about before we move on to Mariah's segment is the theme of existentialism. And to be honest, I haven't read that much about philosophy. I mean, I think some of it is interesting, but I haven't really had a chance to dive into it, to be honest. But if I'm not mistaken, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, the concept of existentialism is basically asking yourself, who am I and what am I doing here? And throughout the entire movie, we see Louis doing just that. He's always trying to ask Lestat, show me the ways of the vampire, explain to me what it all means, who made you, where do you come from, where am I going, where are you going, where do you want to go, basically. And Lestat, being the frat boy that he is, he's like, I don't care about that shit, bro. Why should I tell you these things? So they have a couple of arguments throughout the movie. There's a couple of scenes in which they go at each other about this. And then, of course, we see it when Louis and Claudia end up in Europe because Louis wants to find more vampires to ask them the questions that Lestat would not answer for him. So he's on a quest during this whole movie. He wants to figure out what he is, why he is that way, and where can he go, basically. So it's a very, if you want to look at it that way, it can be a very deep philosophical film. And yeah, I just wanted to point that out. I mean, like I said, I'm not an expert, so I can't really go in depth too much about this. But it's something that I think we can all relate to at some point in our lives. I think, especially now, people of my generation, I am about to be 40 years old in a couple of years. I still look damn good, though. but I've noticed that a lot of people in my age group, my generation, are going through this kind of crisis. The so-called midlife crisis, if you will. So don't make fun of us, you youngins, because as you see me, so shall you be. Meaning that at some point you're going to be old as hell too, so shut up. But seriously though, I've been asking myself a lot of questions about life lately. So stuff like, why is life the way it is? Where am I? Who am I? Where am I going? Am I real? Am I a hologram? Am I in a computer simulation? Am I in the Matrix? I mean, it's a little bit different than that, but I think you get the point. You get to a point in your life in which you start questioning your decisions and whether the place in which you find yourself at any given point is the place that you wanted it to be, that you imagined yourself being when you were younger. And so it can really fuck with your mind, man, if you're not careful. And that is why I only ask myself these questions when I'm drunk. So once again, I do not condone alcoholism, but drinking works for me to deal with the implications of finding a possible answer to these questions of humanity. And I wanted to leave you with that because it's a nice way to end things, I guess, for this segment, by having yourselves question your existence and mortality. So good luck answering those questions on your own. And anyways, we are gonna take a little break here and come right back with Mariah's segment, for which she'll give us her impressions and thought on this movie. So stick around. Okay, so we're back, and now we are bringing Mariah into the discussion. So first of all, Mariah, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good.
That's very cool to hear. I'm glad. And so, about this movie, why don't you go ahead and get started with your overall impressions? Did you like the movie? Did you not like it?
I absolutely loved this movie. It was so good. The CGI was very different than what we have today. So that was really cool to experience the 90s CGI time and that era and stuff. But wow, the actors, everything, the outfits, just it's a very classic. And it reminded me very much of the book cover. So I definitely loved that they were able to make that very similar, I feel like.
It's funny you mentioned the word classic, because we were just talking about how this movie is almost 30 years old.
Oh no!
So, I mean, I keep thinking about stuff like that, because it's weird how growing up in the 90s, if we go back to the 90s, for example, when I was a kid, this movie came out in 94, so I was like 10 years old. So,
wow.
The age that this movie is now, it would have been like me watching a movie from the 60s when I was a kid. So,
wow. That's very interesting. I was a few months when this movie came out. A few months old.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm just like, wow, everything that I grew up with is aging. And so am I.
Yes, that's exactly how I feel just hearing about the remake of this movie.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's gonna be I don't know if it's a miniseries or a movie that's coming out. I think it's already out, actually.
Yeah.
I think it may be out, because I heard some people talking about it the other day, and I was like, is that out already? So I need to keep more in touch with that kind of stuff. So let's go ahead and get a little bit more specific. So, you mentioned the costumes and the scenery, so I agree with you. I do think that the costumes look really well made. They look really fancy and European-like, I think. It's very much like what I picture life in Europe in those years, in the 1700s, when this movie starts, quote-unquote. And I feel like they're very appropriate for... I mean, I may be wrong, because I'm not an expert. But, I mean, I can't just imagine people in the audience... That's not how they dress in the 1700s. That's like 1800s. Okay, whatever. Like,
yeah, were you born in 1700s?
I think they look fine. Funny. So, as far as the scenery, I think it's very dark and brooding, very gothic, very spooky.
Yes, it's very classic goth.
It kind of reminded me of the... And that's why I mentioned the movies from the 60s, because it reminded me of movies like Dracula from the 60s and all those old school movies. Very dark and brooding. And also, I like specifically the scenes in the graveyard. And the graveyard, that scene is... Yeah. The graveyard itself looks really like a real place that I could go to.
It's so beautiful. The graveyard almost reminds me of the... opening scene of Are You Afraid of the Dark where they kind of show the tombstones. That's kind of what it reminded me of when I first watched it. I was like, wow, that's really cool.
No, actually, that is correct. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. And the other thing that I want to mention real quick before I ask you something else is I also liked the scenes in the theater, but we'll get to that in a minute, okay? I just want to talk about the way it looked. It looked very, I don't know, it kind of reminded me of like the opera. I don't know.
Yes, I definitely agree with that, because the women, they wore the puffy dresses, but also it was very corset-like. So you had a lot of cleavage showing the women, and also with their beautiful curls coming down.
Yeah, it's a very, very well done scenery. So, what about the characters themselves? What do you think of Lestat and Louis? How do they get along? Are they best friends? Are they enemies? What are they?
I feel like they are enemies.
Why is that?
I feel like Louis always doesn't want to harm. And Lestat, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, is a bit more of a leader type and wanting to be fed. And just not being cautious all the time like Louis is. So I just don't think they see eye to eye. They kind of remind me of stepbrothers hating each other.
You mean like the movie Step Brothers, or just people in?
I kind of, yeah. Definitely.
Because in the in that movie, if you haven't seen it out there in the audience, it's hilarious. I recommend it. But it starts off with them kind of hating each other, and then eventually they become friends. But I mean, it's not really what happens here. But I can see where you're coming from with that because they hate each other, and but they're stuck living together, so they have to like make the best of it, I think. I do agree with that. I think that because of the kinds of people that they were, or the kinds of personalities they have, rather, because they're not really people anymore, they're vampires. They're not human. But their personalities, I do think, like you said, that Lestat is more of a spotlight hogging person, like me, 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 look at me, I'm so pretty, and I'm so I'm the best. He's probably gonna he's probably a Leo. I don't know. I'm just getting a Leo a Leo vibe from Lestat, because I would know, because I'm a Leo, of course. I'm
And
a
Louis would probably be more of a Cancer, probably, I think. Just very emotional. I don't know.
Yeah, he's very brooding and very, what's the word? I mean, Lestat calls him whiny or something like that, but I mean, I don't want to say that because I mean, yeah, he is kind of whiny to be honest. But I do feel like Louis is more I don't know if I want to use the word philosophical or more introspective. He thinks about stuff a lot. He tries to figure things out by thinking about them more thoroughly. And Lestat is more of like the let's go, I'm ready, let's go kill some people and eat them kind of thing. So, I mean, I think me coming from a psychological background, it's kind of like the two extremes of a person. Just really quick, the theory of psychoanalysis by Freud, in which the id is the instinctual animalistic self, and that'll be Lestat because all he cares about is having fun and eating people and killing them. And and Louis, excuse me, would be more of the super ego. He's more of like the person that tries to, or the part of the personality that tries to figure out things and think about them thoroughly and wants to be perfect and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's kind of an interesting relationship they have. What do you think about the little girl, Claudia?
I love her. She is so adorable and very scary. The way she screams and gets angry is so cute, but terrifying.
Yeah, she is definitely, I think, the scariest character in the movie.
I believe she's probably that way because she's actually a, what, 200-year-old woman in a little girl's body.
I think.
Possibly, I think, I'm not sure, but that just blows my mind how cool that concept is.
It's very interesting indeed, because I mean, imagine we always picture kids as being kids, of course, you know, not being mature enough, and they need to get older to become more experienced in things in general. And ideally, the more experience they get, the more mature they become. And obviously, when time goes by, they grow up and they get older, they become adults. And in this case, like you said, it's the personality of a 200-year-old woman. But inside the body of what is she, like 8 or 9 years old in the movie?
Yes.
So we see her changing quite a bit, I think. I don't know if you agree. Because when they first meet her, she's really scary, and or not scary, excuse me, she's really scared. Because I think her mom just died of the plague or some sort of weird illness. So she's really shy and really scared of things. And then as the movie goes by, you see her transforming into this very scheming person. I mean, it is kind of funny when you see her and Lestat kind of, I think Lestat kind of trained her in a bit, or tried to show her the ways of vampirism. And it's really funny when she eats like the piano instructor and she eats like all these people, and he's like, "No, don't do it. No." Like he's training a dog. It's kind of like, so I don't know if you agree with that she went from being this really scared child to this really eager to learn child, and then in the end she became really bitter.
That was really sad. I definitely agree with all of that. It was really interesting just the how the life cycle is in vampires and everything they go through, and it seems very fast paced too with her age personalities.
Yeah, I mean, because of course, time limits, we can't see what happens in 200 years in a 2-hour movie. So they do like a time lapse, they fast forward in time, I think. But I mean, just think about getting older in the real world. I mean, as far as we are, I think back to when I was a kid, and that doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but it was. I mean, it was 25, 20, 30 years ago, you know, it's a long time. And I feel like I've gone through a lot. But at the same time, sometimes I still feel connected to my childhood. I still feel like that wasn't too long ago, that I was just a kid, not maybe like 5 years ago, but that's not really the case. It's been a lot longer than that. So, I mean, I can only imagine with her being like a 10-year-old or 9-year-old and being a 200-year-old person. I mean, all the memories, all the events they went through, and everything they lived through, and it's like, oh my God, just too much to handle. So now we're moving to the weird vampire theater company, whatever they call themselves. What do you think of them?
It was very interesting.
In what way?
I don't know. I'm like totally blank.
Well, I mean, because when we meet them, Louis was mentioning to the. Because, I mean, this whole movie takes place, by the way. Louis kidnaps a reporter, I think, in the beginning. And so he's telling him his story from when he was human to when he became a vampire. So then, in this point of the story, Louis is telling the reporter that he was done looking for vampires. I mean, because he was trying to find some for the longest time. And maybe learn from them what the secret to being a vampire really is. And he was never able to find anyone, so he gave up. But then these people find him somehow.
That just kind of gave me a huge question mark, as, and I'm sure it is probably explained more in the book, but watching the film, I was really curious about that and how that unfolded.
Like, really suspicious, like maybe they were stalking him for a bit.
Yes, and Claudia, and I believe who else was it? Madeline? I
Yeah,
think.
Madeline, I think they make her
Yes.
into a vampire later on, a little bit further on,
Later
but
on.
You know what? I think you might be right because one of the things that we see in this movie is that vampires can read each other's thoughts.
Oh, yes.
So maybe they did stalk him in a way. Maybe they tuned into his thoughts one time they were walking around the city or something, and hey, let's follow this guy because he's one of us, kind of thing. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's interesting. So, I mean, I think the company is very interesting because, I mean, they can literally get away with murder. Because what they do is they have these stage shows, quote unquote, in which they literally eat a person in front of the audience, and the audience thinks it's all just a play or a show. So, I mean, can you imagine getting an invitation to a play or something like that in your local theater, and you see something like this happen in front of you, and you're like, "Hey, man, that looks awesome. This is so real."
Yes, I actually just went to a horror circus
Oh, cool.
in the summer, and it is crazy.
Was it really realistic?
Yes, very realistic. And I'm not sure if they mess with your eyes in this sense. And
How?
then. Well, you see, it's kind of like the movie, just it looks like there's something actually happening. There was this horror dude. It looked like he was ripping a head off at this horror circus. And then she comes out in the end, and I was blown away. And I thought, oh wow, her head is back on her body.
As it
So it just blows my mind how they do that. So yeah, and it is called, I believe it's there, they actually travel all over America, and it's called the Horror Cirque or something like that.
Oh, like Cirque in French.
Yes, and it's a horror circus,
Or maybe I,
and it
yeah.
is amazing. And so that's what this, what you're saying, that's what that reminded me of in modern time, which I'm hoping they don't actually do it. But they make it so real because there's blood everywhere and he's holding what looks like her head. So it could be maybe, and it's all dark everywhere. So I'm sure they have lots of tricks on how to manipulate the eye and with lots of their tricks.
I mean, just imagine that actually was real, like in the movie. Like
Oh
you actually witness someone's head being cut off, and you're like, "Oh, that's cool." Because that's what happens in the movie. People think they're going to a play or something, and they show this group of vampires just literally draining her of her blood on stage. And then when they're done, they kind of just toss her aside like she's nothing. They kind of just make her couch surf and just throw her in the background somewhere. So, I mean, it's pretty smart of them, I think, to think of something like this, because they can literally do what they want and get away with it, and no one will tell them anything, because, like, oh, it's just acting, you know?
It's just a show, right?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure they find people that are not going to be missed. For example, maybe poor people, homeless people, stuff like that.
Yes, like people who don't have anyone who may look for them.
Exactly. Or maybe even kidnap people in other cities so that they don't even have to worry about the cops investigating because, no one knows this person in this town, so who's gonna care?
Oh, that's so scary to think about.
It is, isn't it? So, I mean, then we witness how they end up finding out that Claudia and Louis try to kill Lestat. So, I guess one of the vampire code rules is that you can't do that to another vampire. So they decide to kill the girl and Madeline, who at this point is now a vampire, and Louis, they choose to just bury him in a coffin forever. But then the other dude, Armand, has a change of heart and he rescues Louis, but it's too late to save the girls.
Oh, yes. That was so sad to see.
It was. I mean, it's a pretty sad development in the story, but what do you think of the visual effects with the when they turn to ash?
Okay, I don't know if we have audiences out there that remember the Gargoyles in the 90s, the cartoon. That's what they reminded me of. They look almost like statues a bit or something. And it looks kind of like an underground. I'm not sure if it was an underground dungeon or something, but it was so sad just seeing Claudia's face holding on to Madeline. And that's such a powerful moment, I think.
Because at that point they know that there's no escape. They're dead pretty much. I mean.
And their faces say it all, their expression. And that was really sad.
We're gonna jump ahead a little bit and get to the ending. So in the ending,
Ooh.
I mean, Louis ends up getting even with the vampire theater people. He kills all of them by setting them on fire. And then he continues to talk to the reporter and tells him that now it's the present time, the 80s and 90s. And he finds Lestat once again, and Lestat is living in this abandoned house, and he's all weak and nothing like he was in the beginning. He looks completely different. So I think that's another major transformation in one of the characters. But then the movie ends with the reporter wanting to become a vampire, of all things. So why do you think that people are so into the idea of becoming this kind of thing? Like, because I mean, he completely missed the point of the story, I think. And that's why Louis gets upset and tries to hit him. He's like, dude, like, I've been telling you my story for the past, I don't know, 2, 3 hours, and you learned nothing. So why do you think this guy, the reporter, wants to become a vampire after he heard all these sad stories about death and destruction?
I think honestly, it's probably just to say, I'm a vampire.
To me, that's kind of interesting how he just missed the point completely, and he's like, I think it's kind of like when they show a person those commercials, like, don't do drugs type of thing.
Oh,
So
yeah, they do. Yeah,
that makes them
exactly.
more curious as to what it would feel like to maybe try something like that. And I'm not advocating for that. Don't do drugs, guys, out there in the audience. I'm not saying that. But I think it's kind of the same reasoning, you know, when someone tells you you can't do something or you shouldn't do something, that's when you become the most curious about it, I think.
Oh yes, definitely. It's very similar to when your parent tells you don't do that, or don't, like you said, don't do drugs, and they go and do it just to spite you or to be like, hey, I did this. So, whatever. So maybe that's another possibility, is that he wanted to probably just show off. And but I don't know, just from his character, just from impressions, I do feel he wanted to be a vampire.
Because in the beginning, I think he's a little bit more skeptic. Because when Louis told him I'm a vampire, he's like, oh, okay, sure, whatever. But I mean, eventually, as he heard more about the story, he did become more interested, and he ended up wanting to become one. So I thought that was kind of weird. I mean, not weird, but interesting rather. So I got one more question, Mariah, before I ask you for your scores for this movie. And this movie has a lot of sexual elements. I'm not gonna go too much into that, but I mean, there's a lot of sexual imagery and a lot of that kind of stuff. And then that made me think of movies like Twilight and how people were losing their minds about the vampires. Even, you know, it was funny that even older women, like in their 30s and 40s, were crazy about that movie.
Whoa, I did not know this. I thought it was just the
Oh
tweens.
no.
Oh
It was there was this whole
no.
contingent of older women, and nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm just, you know,
Oh no.
but it made me wonder, like, why do people,
And it seems like it's women in specific. I don't know if you agree with this, that seem to think that vampires are sexy. I don't know.
To an extent, maybe. Like, I love Nandor from What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show. I love Nandor. I think I love him because he's so just that beautiful long hair. And that's about it. I probably wouldn't marry Nandor for life. But I think it's probably also is another thing too, like metal music. Some women actually love metal music. And also most women, they really care about the hair and what beautiful hair they wish they had or something. And so I think when we see somebody with very gorgeous hair, it's just a very, I wish I had that. Or you want to touch it so bad. I don't know. That's just from my experience from watching vampire movies, and also too, just probably as well as the clothing as well, because we don't really see men with beautiful long hair in these vampire gothic costumes walking around. So that too would be a rarity. So I'm thinking maybe that's another thing, is just that extra rarity in life that we don't get to see every day. So I think in ways we just get really happy seeing that beautiful hair and that beautiful gothic gown or whatever gothic clothing they may be wearing.
Wow, that's really interesting, and to be honest, not exactly what I expected to hear.
It's kind
No.
of like the same with metal music. Like, we
Yeah.
like the metal guys with the hair, the beautiful long hair, or curly, or whatever.
Yeah, because I mean, I've always thought that I don't know what, maybe because I mean, I can't say for sure, obviously, but I always thought that women thought vampires are sexy because they're so, what's the word I'm looking for? Not manly, but
Unique.
I mean, yeah. I guess I mean it's different. Like you were saying that you don't see that every day, so maybe it's something that's a little different and that catches their attention. So I don't know.
Yes, I would definitely say it definitely catches your attention. Also, too, the beautiful vampire teeth.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of the same thing with guys. I mean, I'm not gonna go too much into that, but we are really visual. I mean, really visual, and so when we see someone, I mean, straight men like myself, when I see someone that I think is dressed nicely and she looks pretty, and I was like, hey, whoa, who is she?
What's your number?
I know, right? So I mean, and that's why I didn't expect your answer because usually it's guys that are like that focus more on the looks and the whole aesthetic thing, right?
Oh no, women do the
That's good to know.
same thing. Yeah.
So I know what you dress like for
We're
Halloween.
crazy. Yeah.
Oh, but actually, I have a long wig already. I just need to buy the old-timey European suit.
Oh.
So
Yes, and a gown.
good to know,
Make a
Mariam.
gown cape.
I shall make notes of this. Thank you. And oh, actually, one last question. And I don't know. Would you want to become a vampire at some point? Like the people in this movie?
Yes. If I had to choose an age, I would probably choose 24. I would choose to be a vampire at age 24 so I can look like that at
Forever.
24 forever.
So, what would you want to do? I mean, besides drinking blood and stuff,
I would probably say collect dolls and just be able to have endless opportunities with dolls and dollhouses and getting to just make miniatures. That sounds like a really cool life.
Would I want to become one? I don't know because I'm really
mean, I like a lot of people, I'm afraid of death. I mean, not afraid of death necessarily, but to know that at some point who you are is not gonna be there anymore, that you won't be able to learn new things and experience life anymore. That, if you think about it, can be really scary, a scary thought. But I don't know if I'd want to be to live forever, you know? I mean, but at the same time, you kind of do, or I kind of do. But if you ask me what I would do if I were to become a vampire somehow, I would probably want to be about maybe a little older than you said, maybe like 28, 30. Because by that point, I felt like I was more mature mentally. And what I would do is I would want to travel the world and I would want to meet new people and experience new things, especially with music. I would feel like I can learn how to play more instruments and stuff like that. So I don't know. That'd be my choice. So very interesting, Mariah. Thank you for your answers. And before we sign off for the night, what are your scores for the movie? How many crispy bacon vampires do you give this out of 10?
I would probably go with 8.
With 8? All right.
Yes.
I am going to agree with you. I'm giving this an 8 as well because I mean, I think it's a good movie. It's really interesting. There's a lot of cool themes and stuff like that. The setting is amazing. The music's pretty good too. I just think that it may have been a little bit too long at times. Like, I think they could have maybe cut out about 15, 20 minutes and it would have been better. But I mean, other than that, I think it's great. I recommend it. And so, for the vampires in general in this movie, how many skulls out of 10? How scary are they? How powerful are they? How creepy are they?
I would probably give it a 6.
A 6?
A 6.
I'm gonna go a little higher than you and give them a 7. Because, I mean, yeah, they're vampires and everything like that, but they have some different weaknesses than other vampires. For example, they can't drink the person to death. They need to let him live for a little bit before they. Or rather, sorry, I meant to say that they can't kill the person they're drinking the blood from, because if they kill the person, then they can start dying too, I think. So, I've never heard of that weakness before for a vampire, but that's pretty interesting. And, of course, they're weak to sunlight. If you put them in sunlight, they'll become crispy bacon.
Yes, and not glitter like Twilight.
Yeah, not like Twilight, where he's glows, like, ugh, whatever. All right, Mariah, so anything else you want to add before we sign off for tonight?
Nope, I think that's all.
All right, cool. Well, thank you once again for joining me for this. It's always interesting to talk to you and hear your insights and opinions on the movies that we talk about. So, thank you for that. And before we leave, though, we need to remind our listeners, Mariah, that they can go on our social media. They can find us on linktree.com/mythsbehindlgds. And that will give them all the links to our podcast, everything from our Twitter to our Instagram to our Facebook to our merch store. So we also want to encourage you that if you listen to us on a pod outlet that allows you to score our podcast, to give us the highest possible score, because why not? You are cool like that. So do you have anything for next week, Mariah, on the calendar?
No, I do not.
I mean, it's because we've been kind of playing it by ear. I've been talking to people about doing guest appearances for the month of October, and some of it's worked out, some of it hasn't. But it's okay. I mean, we'll make it work ourselves. We will have guests at some point, though, so stick around for that. I don't want to spoil the surprises, but we will have some more guests. We had Robbie for the episode on Day of the Dead, and as of today, in which we are recording this segment for Mariah's thoughts, we just released the episode on Children of the Corn, so go check that out too, if you haven't. All right, so having said all that, I hope you guys have a great evening, morning, madrugada, whatever it is. Stay away from creepy kids that drink blood. Stay away from people that drink blood on stage. And well, until we see you on the next one, have a good one.